Hey, Charlotte.
Hello.
Martin has got famous.
Why?
He's got his biggest fan in the room. Go on, show Charlotte.
Oh, dear. I can't wait for Hannah to be back because she doesn't give me dad jokes. So Martin is known for the dad joke. And now, Phil, you're not meant to join ranks with him.
No, it's my era. I'm in the era of dad jokes. And obviously, Martin's got a fan because we're recording this at a time when it is incredibly hot. My wife has taken it upon herself to shave the dog.
With your razor?
No, she bought some new clippers, but she did it and then has realised that with Labradors, you're not really meant to trim them. But I don't think she went too extreme, although the dog does look like its head is a little bit bigger than its body now. It's a bit out of proportion. But she seems a lot better off. She's not scratching herself with the heat, you know, feeling the heat. So I think it's worked.
You'll have to watch out because your missus will be after you now with the clippers. So if you start complaining it's too hot.
I could probably do the haircut, to be honest. So I'm not going to complain. But she did cut my son's hair the other day and I can see the value in a barber. Put it that way. Hi, I'm Phil Maiden.
Hello, I'm Charlotte Fulkes-Rees, and welcome to The Ag Show.
Coming up, as we emerge from another heat wave, we'll hear from the Met Office about changing weather patterns and extreme events.
Climate change isn't really a problem for the future. It's something that we're obviously experiencing now, and actually has been happening over the last 20 or 30 40, 50 years. For the last couple of generations, really, we started to see noticeable changes.
And off the back of that, we'll be finding out more about the work we're doing on climate adaptation and resilience for farmers.
So it's not only just responding or withstanding or coping to the here and now when these weather or climate impacts hit the business. It's also thinking about the longer term as well. So anticipating that these events will be more frequent or intense in the future and making sure that it's planned into the business.
We'll also pick out some of the top stories of the last few days, and we've got a few dad jokes from Stasha in the retail team, who feels the need to brighten everyone's day.
I'm getting it from all angles now, aren't I? Phil, Martin and Stasha. But a reminder, new episodes of The Ag Show drop every Wednesday at midday, available wherever you get your podcasts.
With audio and video versions every show, just subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode.
And do get in touch. We love hearing from you. Comment on any of our social posts or email agshow@ahdb.org.uk.
A lot of farms have been feeling the strain of late with high temperatures and very dry ground. But the recent record-breaking hot spell isn't just a one-off, as we're seeing more frequent extremes, hotter, drier, wetter conditions, all packed into the same year.
So this week, we're getting under the bonnet of what's changing in our weather and what that means on farm. To help us, we're joined by Tom Crocker, a science manager at the Met Office, and Alice Sin, AHDB's senior environment manager for climate resilience. Now, welcome to the Ag Show, both. I hope you've recovered from all these extreme heats that we've been having recently. But Tom, starting with you, I think is a great point. The last couple of months, we have had some record high temperatures. You know, how does this fit into the bigger picture of changing weather patterns in the UK?
Hi, Charlotte. Yeah, thanks for having me on. So I think it's really just demonstrative of the fact that climate change isn't really a problem for the future. It's something that we're obviously experiencing now and actually has been happening over the last 20 or 30, 40, 50 years. For the last couple of generations, really, we started to see noticeable changes. But the current kind of heat spells that we've had in late spring and early summer, basically, are kind of really reflective of just how those increases is really kind of accelerating. We're really moving into uncharted territory for the UK. So I've got some stats handy, and people will talk a lot about 1976 and the very hot June that we had there. So we've already broken that record this year with the heat wave we've seen this June. In terms of consecutive days that we saw temperatures above 35 Celsius. So we saw that for 3 days in June 1976. We saw it for another 3 days in August of 1990. But then in 2020 and 2022, we saw it within the space of a couple of years. And now we've seen it with, looks like we're seeing it again. Those kind of extreme heat waves that we're starting to experience, they're unfortunately becoming a lot more common.
And I suppose it is just, we are seeing more and more extremes one end to the other, aren't we? Whether it's we go from a super wet winter through to these dry springs and summers. How much of a challenge is that, I guess, for us going forward?
So it's absolutely an increasing challenge in terms that from a sort of simple thermodynamics perspective, and when you think about climate change as an issue, what's going on is because of the increase in greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, we're increasing the amount of radiative energy that's contained in the Earth's atmosphere. So that means there's more energy just knocking around in general. And from a thermodynamics perspective, that also means there's more moisture quite often held in the air. So when it rains, we get more rainy events, but that increased heat and various changes in the atmospheric dynamics also means that in the UK in particular, we're likely to see the driest summers that, you know, you alluded to, basically drought. And so the trends are quite clear, particularly in the heat, in that the warming trend is absolutely continuing. There's a less strong trend, but it's still there for summer droughts kind of increasing in the future as well. And winter rainfall and those winter rainfall events is increasing slightly. But the interesting thing there is we get so much year-to-year variability in the UK, particularly in the winter. That year-to-year variability is staying quite high, even under climate change. So although we are going to see continuing wetter winters or slightly wetter winters as we go into the future, there's still going to be a lot of year-to-year variability, and we're going to get those less wet and sometimes very dry winters in between, which on itself is still potentially a challenge, just that unpredictability.
So it sounds like we'll still have plenty to talk about when it comes to the weather, because being British, it's always a topic of conversation, isn't it? That's the nice icebreaker for us. So you said there that obviously year to year, we're seeing a lot of variability even within these extremes. But is this something that you can maybe track or predict a little bit easier if you're looking longer term?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you kind of mentioned there, it's very difficult or impossible, in fact, really, once you get beyond a few months to give any sort of definitive forecast around, you know, July of next year even is going to be particularly hot or particularly wet or whatever else. But what we can do, what we do as climate scientists, is we use our climate models and we look at the statistics at what comes out from looking over a long time span. So over a 20 or 30 year time span, that captures the amount of variability that we generally see in the global climate due to, in particular, large scale features such as things like ENSO, other large scale atmospheric modes of variability, such as the North Atlantic Oscillation is another big one that affects the UK. And by looking at an entire 20 or 30 year block of data, we can look at the frequency of occurrence of extremes in that simulated future climate and then understand how those risks are changing relative to the present day. So one example that we've looked at in my team's work, working for stakeholders such as DEFRA and others, thinking about agricultural risks, is the risks of sort of heat stress in Enthesis, basically around the late May, early June kind of period. And again, those periods of temperatures above 35 Celsius, we can see in the past data, they've been incredibly rare, basically. They've only happened a couple of times in recent history, and it was very, very rare going back into the 70s. As we get into the 2030s, in particularly the 2050s, we see a signal in the climate models that those consecutive periods of, say, 3 or 4 days of 35 Celsius in a row starts to become a risk that may happen more regularly, basically, once you get a couple of decades into the future.
And Alice, from AHDB's perspective, how are these shifts actually showing up on farm day to day? What are we seeing?
Well, if we look towards last year and coming into this year, we had a very dry spring and summer that culminated into droughts in many parts of the UK. And for our livestock farmers, it meant that grass growth was limited and they were using winter rations earlier in the year and they had to buy and feed as well. And then we had a very wet winter as well. So Tom, and we've talked about these extremes, the weather whiplash gone from a very wet winter just passed, and then we've headed into very warm spell at the end of spring, and now we're in this heat wave early summer. Currently, farmers are trying to do the best as they can to adjust to the heat. So heat stress is an important issue that's affecting livestock farmers at the moment. So it's affecting livestock directly. So you might have cattle being moved into shaded sheltered areas. The timings may be affected in terms of feeding as well. And also operational activities being moved to cooler times of the day as well. And just making sure that water intake is being kept up, which is very important in dairy cattle as well, which can affect their productivity and fertility.
It feels to me like there's kind of two different things going on at the same time here, because you've got the short term where if you get, for example, a heat wave like we've had in June, that creates lots of short-term problems for the industry. You mentioned livestock, but then you've also got kind of those longer-term issues. So, for example, if you get a period of drought or wet weather at the wrong time, that has a different impact, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's why we're raising the awareness of planning and building resilience. So it's not only just responding or withstanding or coping to the here and now when these weather or climate impacts hit the business. It's also thinking about the longer term as well, anticipating that these events will be more frequent or intense in the future, and making sure that it's planned into the business.
So, Tom, you're the weather expert and climate expert here. Alice, you're the one who's looking at what's going on farm and the impacts. Are we connecting these two worlds together enough? I mean, I know farmers love checking weather forecasts, but is there more we need to be doing here?
The answer to that is yes. And there's more work absolutely happening as time goes on, really. So a lot of the work that my team delivers at the Met Office is funded by DEFRA. But over the last few years, we've been working quite closely with other organisations such as ADAS. And we've got some upcoming work developing that AHDB are involved in as well, and the Catchment Sensitive Farming Programme, which some people may be aware of, which is supported by Natural England. And the idea of this work is to take essentially the weather and climate expertise that I have, that my team has, use that by working with experts such as Alice and others that have that agronomy and agricultural industry expertise and kind of identify the so what of all this information about the changing hazards. So Alice has talked, you know, just now about some of those impacts on farms and what it leads to and what those challenges are. And by working together, we're able to identify what are actually the resilience options that are available to industry and try and explore which ones are the most cost effective, which ones are the most sensible ones to consider by bearing in mind what the most relevant hazards will be for a particular type of farm in a particular type of the UK, because different parts of the UK are going to see relatively different changes in the magnitude and the scale of the changes of those hazards. So you can talk in a very broad way around the big picture. There's a strap line that we often use at the Met Office. You'll see it in some of our communications that have gone out about climate change, that the broad picture for the UK is hotter, drier summers and warmer, wetter winters. And in general, that's true. But there's a lot of nuance and regional variation in that message as well. And there's a seasonal variation as well in terms of what that looks like. So it's really taking that broad message of the warmer, wetter winters, hotter, drier summers, and then kind of using our expertise to dig more into the detail, work out what that actually means for example, the different growth phases of different crops or the different activities that will be going on at different times of year through the agricultural cycle. And then that can really help understand which are the most significant hazards in terms of the ones that really intersect with the points where the activities that farmers and growers are engaging in are most vulnerable. Because that vulnerability to a heat wave on a farm will be different at different times of the year, depending on what's going on, what growth stage a crop is in, for example.
AHDB has recently launched the Climate Resilience on Farm Action Planner, and this will help our farmers to identify the climate-related risks which are relevant to their particular business, look at vulnerabilities and where their business is particularly exposed, but also look at opportunities as well. And it will help them prioritise which areas are most relevant then for action, for adaptation, for building resilience. And it will help them produce a structured plan that they can come back to and review.
Well, we'll be finding out a little bit more about the Climate Resilience Action Planners later in the show, and we'll be hearing more from Tom and Alice too. But for now, thanks for joining us.
Hi, I'm Alice Perry with your AHDB news for the week commencing the 31st of August. Our Let's Eat Balance campaign is back throughout September with new research showing purchase intent among Gen Z consumers has increased for red meat and dairy. The aim is to reach 80% of main grocery shoppers, highlighting British produce as part of a healthy, balanced diet. Our latest harvest report shows better performing crops in some northern areas have slightly improved the national picture, but overall yields remain disappointing following another dry season. Wheat yields are still around 12% below the five-year average, but oilseed rape continues to perform strongly. A reminder that beef, lamb and dairy levy payers can get 50% off an online course on herbal leys and multi-species swards. The course is aimed at helping farmers make informed decisions on managing diverse swards. And blue tongue cases are still rising across Great Britain. Livestock keepers can visit our dedicated hub to access the latest guidance. That's all for now. Find out more at ahdb.org.uk.
Welcome to AHDB's Forage for Knowledge update for Thursday the 27th of August. Ayrshire, Dumfriesshire, Lancashire and North Yorkshire were measuring grass this week, bringing our average to 43.7 kilos of growth. More grass measuring may resume as much of the country has some rain this week. If returning cows to grass, don't rush into the first bit of green. Monitor leaf appearance. Ryegrass should reach 3 leaves before grazing and should not be grazed below 2 leaves. The third leaf is the biggest and contributes most to growth. Grazing before 2 leaves have fully emerged can damage the plant's resilience. Additionally, soil will have good nitrogen reserves, which means nitrogen can wait to be applied after grazing to support grass growth. I'm Emily Udall. For more analysis and commentary from Piers Badnall, go to the AHDB website and search Forage for Knowledge.
I'm David Noble from Crossover Hill Farms, Stratford-upon Avon. Last March, with the help of volunteers from CPRE and various other individuals that came along, we laid this hedge, which is an old hedge, very thick, thorn hedge, thin at the bottom, tall at the top, not ideal for livestock protection. So you see we've laid it down now, we've got new hazel stakes, hazel bindings on the top, all done very nicely. And it's all growing nice, it's growing nicely from the bottom, so that will now be stock proof in about 5 or 10 years' time. Where there's large gaps, we put new whips in. You can see them here. I watered these during May to keep them alive, but in June, on came the rain and it's kept them alive. I think we're going to get through the summer without any further watering. So I've got about 60 whips in here and we'll see how it looks in the future. The ground wasn't prepared. It's hard ground it went into. In a similar location on the other side of the farm, I dug the trench up first. And the whips are twice that height now because I prepared the ground and made it soft and it grew beautifully. So the secret is to prepare the ground first, not try and get in as quickly as possible.
Well, 2 things for me. What a beautiful hedge. And there is so much skill that goes into laying a hedge. But second point, I think he might have been a little bit overconfident that he wouldn't need to be watering it going through June, July, August, because given anything with these heat waves we've been having, yeah, it's been a little bit dry, hasn't it?
Certainly has been hot, but you can tell by the man's vehicle that he's going to look after that hedge very, very well, because he's looking after that classic Land Rover very well. I saw it had a very nice paint job on it.
Noticing the important parts, eh?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I got distracted by the Land Rover.
Well, if like David, you want to show us what you are actually doing on farm right now, what you're proud of, or what piece of advice you could give, or indeed, if you need some help with something, then please do get in touch. agshow@ahdb.org.uk. We want to hear from you on a future Ag Show. So it is now time for our news picks. Phil or Charlotte? Phil or Charlotte? I'm going to plump for Charlotte with the first story from the news.
Now, I know it feels like a very long time ago, but cast your mind back to 2020. All of that chaos that was going on. And you might remember a story in the news about a council removing meat from its menus. Well, Farmers Weekly are reporting that that very same council is now making headlines again, this time for reversing the decision. Enfield Council has brought meat back onto menus at its events, reversing a 6-year policy that limited catering to vegan and vegetarian options. The restriction was first introduced as part of efforts to reduce emissions and promote more plant-based diets, but understandably it faced criticism from farming groups who argued it failed to reflect the environmental standards behind British livestock production. Following local elections in May this year, the new council leadership has now scrapped that policy, saying the change is intended to support farmers both locally and across the UK while restoring greater choice in catering at council functions. Now, I'm sure it's not a surprise how happy industry organisations are that this has happened, and they're very much welcoming the decision, pointing that the environmental and welfare credentials of British meat, the high standards of its production, and the importance it brings to rural economies and domestic supply chains, it's a very good thing to have it back on menus. Now, overall, this is really reflecting that there's often quite a complex debate around public sector food policy. So it's that balancing of environmental ambitions and then also the role that livestock in food production and rural livelihoods plays. And at times, what we have to realise is that actually there is an overlap between the two. And it's why it's so important that the work that we do at AHDB is ongoing. So whether that's building the evidence base on environmental impact to strengthening the case for British meat through ongoing research in welfare and sustainability is completely key.
And it is something that AHDB has got involved in terms of conversations with some local authorities where we've found it's been worth our while to be sharing some evidence so that they can make better informed decisions. For example, when the conversation seems to focus around talking about the global impact of livestock agriculture, this is something that AHDB has questioned and tried to point organisations like this in the right direction, because obviously UK farming is very different to the global average. So we have tried to help inform in the debate a number of times. Well, my bit of news this week is an announcement from the government about a new roadmap for farming, which sets out how farmers can cope with climate change driven extremes and cut reliance on expensive fertilisers. Ministers have announced the long-promised farming roadmap, developed in partnership with the sector, which they say will give farmers certainty beyond the next harvest. The plan they've put together includes an extra £53 million for the Farming Innovation Programme, bringing total funding this year to £123 million, with dedicated cash for robotics and soil health and water management. The government plans to work with the industry to develop sector growth plans in areas such as horticulture and poultry, support collaborative models such as cooperatives, and cut EU trade friction hampering exports with a new deal with the European Union. And seasonal worker visas are going to continue to 2030 to support the horticulture sector. If you want to find out any more about this, the best place to look is there's a blog on the DEFRA website. And I'm sure there'll be farmers out there that would like to find out some more detail about the extra funding for the Farming Innovation Programme.
Perfect. Thank you very much, you two, for your news picks. And thank you for your dad joke earlier as well, Phil. Now, before Hannah departed for her honeymoon, we had Stasha from the retail team come on the Ag Show. And she loves to tell a dad joke, whether you want her to or not. Her gift to Aggers, don't go there, Charlotte. We've not had any better suggestions come in yet. So her gift to all Ag Show listeners, aka Aggers, is to brighten up the day with more poor puns. So brace yourself. Here's a couple she recorded earlier.
My neighbour knocked on my door at 2:30 a.m. I just imagine that, 2:30 a.m. Luckily, I was up playing my drums. I like this one. After winning the game, I threw the ball into the crowd, just like you see on the TV, but it didn't go down very well. No, it doesn't really, it's not very acceptable with bowling.
What do you reckon, guys?
I love Stasha, but I hate a dad joke. No, not for me, sorry.
And if those two weren't enough, she's only gone and sent one into me today, blending topical with early 80s pop culture. So here we go. I just saw Adam Ant buying an ice cream. He asked for a standard vanilla.
That one's lost on me. Sorry.
That's niche if you don't know who Adamant is or any Adamant songs. Yeah.
Yeah, not got a clue. Sorry.
Is Stassi going to be coming back in another week with her stash of dad jokes?
There will be more dad jokes coming on an ag show near you very soon. But for now, it's safe to say we need a little bit of a break.
Hi, I'm Annabelle Twinborough, analyst at the AHDB, here with a look at the domestic dairy market for the week commencing 24th of August. GB milk deliveries in July reduced by an estimated 3.2% year-on-year and tipped under the five-year average as heat stress in cows negatively affected yields. August data so far shows a 4.7% decline. Dairy economics have been worsening since last autumn, and the spread of blue tongue virus is another factor likely contributing to the decline. In the latest UK wholesale survey for August, prices remained under pressure, but increased month on month due to the lower supplies. Cream and butter prices rose £77 a tonne and £130 a tonne respectively, with most fat sold directly as cream. Mild cheddar prices moved upwards by £10 a tonne to average £3,060 a tonne as supplies tighten. SNP also strengthened, gaining £110 a tonne over the month for an average of £2,470 a tonne. For the latest data and analysis on red meat, dairy and arable markets, head to ahdb.org.uk and click on Markets and Prices.
Want to get more from your suckler herd? AHDB's Stronger Herds for Stronger Returns campaign is hitting the road this autumn. Join September Farm Walks with housing expert Jamie Robertson alongside environmental and genetics specialists, or attend October discussion panels covering nutrition, animal health and performance. Share ideas with fellow producers and leave with practical tips to help future-proof your herd and business. Find your nearest event at ahdb.org.uk.
Earlier on in the show, we set the scene: more extremes of weather, more uncertainty, and more pressure on farm businesses to adapt. But the good news is there are tools out there to help farmers move from reacting to planning, including our Climate Resilience On-Farm Action Planner.
Let's talk about how that works and how science and forecasting can actually support better decisions on the ground. Tom and Alice, thank you for waiting so patiently. Now, Alice, you mentioned earlier in the show that we have got at AHDB the Climate Resilience Action Planner, and briefly touched on what that is. But if you don't mind reminding our listeners, what is it and then what gap is that trying to fill for farmers?
Yeah, so it's a very simple toolkit, really, that farmers can use to help identify climate risks which are relevant to their farm, but also identifies opportunities which may present themselves for a changing climate as well, and also helps them assess vulnerabilities and where they're exposed and to changing weather patterns, extreme weather events in their business. Well, you designed it so it can be used within overall business planning, so it can help them build business resilience. It's very practical, includes a range of practical actions from, as I said, those easy wins, for example, changing timings and operations, to those which may be a bit more longer term, require a bit more long-term planning, for example, maybe agroforestry, where you may need a bit more funding or technical advice. So there's a range for over different time frames, different businesses, different systems. So there's two action planners. There's one for the ruminant sectors. So there's one for beef, lamb and dairy, and also one for cereals and oil seeds. As I said, they're based around the practical actions. So they build upon all the good work and the best practices that farmers are already doing, but also considers where there is and also an adaptation and resilience benefit to that action. For example, I've touched on agroforestry, but it could be where they're increasing soil resilience by using cover crops or multi-species swards, or increasing organic matter into their soil to help them become more resilient for those periods of very wet weather and very dry weather as well. So the action plan has three elements. There's guidance, which is set out by different weather and climate hazards, and Tom's briefly touched upon those. So it's set out by the high summer temperatures, which we're experiencing right now, lower spring and summer rainfall, high winter rainfall and extreme rainfalls, there, changing winter temperatures, storms and wind, and also rising sea levels, which may affect some farmers in coastal or estuary regions. So set up by hazards, and within those hazards, we set out a number of potential risks or impacts that may affect the farm business. And then within those risks or impacts, for example, it could be waterlogging or flooding of fields. Within that risk, there's a number of actions which the user can take. We have a risk assessment part of the tool as well. So they can use simple risk calculation to assess their, that particular risk to their business before and after any actions are taken.
And Tom, how can Met Office data and forecasting help farmers make better short and long-term decisions?
So I think in the long term, which is where most of my team's work is focused really, is really around interfacing with the type of work that Alice and AHDB are doing in terms of actually getting that really much more informed understanding of what those future hazards look like. And therefore, it really just allows farmers and businesses to do more meaningful, more accurate risk assessments, basically, in terms of actually really identifying what are the problems that I really need to prioritize as the ones that are coming down the track. Alice mentioned, for example, some farmers, some businesses have been dealing with the challenges of high rainfall or drought or heatwave for a number of years. But the real challenge we have ahead of us is that actually with the way things are kind of going in terms of emissions reductions and so on, we're still looking at another couple of decades of those extremes getting more extreme. So we are getting to the point where heat waves, you know, we've had a heat wave early this summer, and the likelihood that is in the next 10 years, there will almost certainly be future heat waves that are even hotter than that, that no farm has ever really had to experience before. So it's really helping farmers and businesses understand what is that maximum that you could experience in the next few years, basically. So that's one area. Another area I think is really useful is around not just the hazards and the challenges that are coming up, but potentially the new opportunities as well. So we're relatively lucky in a way here in the UK in that we're actually in the mid-latitudes, basically. So our climate is shifting, it is getting warmer, but the temperatures that we're going to see in the next 20 or 30 years, they're very hot by UK standards. But if you look at other parts of the world, there are other parts of the world in the present day that have functioning agricultural systems that are working in those temperatures. Now, the challenge we have is that the UK agricultural system and food system isn't set up for that climate at the moment. But if people can understand what that future climate looks like, in maybe in the context of looking at areas elsewhere in the world, that can help inform decision making about the type of adaptation and resilience strategies required, the types of new varieties and potentially new crops entirely that might become more viable, and how agricultural calendars might shift as well with the lengthening growing season, for example. So it's that sort of information that can really help inform. But then I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't obviously plug the short-term forecast that we will do essentially with, you know, the Met Office app and the data that we provide essentially around looking at the hazards that are coming up over the next few days. And again, the weather warnings as well, basically, in terms of, you know, we've had weather warnings out in June for obviously the very high heat that we've seen, but also the thunderstorms as well and the likelihood of extreme rain, you know, that could cause a challenge also.
I'm just going to pick you up on your app point, because I just anecdotally noticed farmers talking about checking the weather and the multitude of apps that they're all using. Everyone seems to use a different app. So how can a farmer get the forecast that they need? How hard is it to get it right?
It's often said, and I've often heard it mentioned, that when you speak to growers and farmers on their businesses and all the rest of it, everyone says no one will know the weather at a particular farm better than the farmer that has farmed there for the last 20 or 30 or even longer, you know, generations sometimes, basically. So it's a little bit of a cliche, but there are microclimates, for want of a better word, that exist, you know, in across the UK, across the world, in fact, basically. And the weather forecast that you get on the Met Office app and everywhere else, they come from a large model. The resolution is getting greater and greater. We're down to almost sub a kilometre now, basically, in terms of the grid bot resolution. But obviously, a kilometre is still a relatively big space. And there's local challenges in terms of the slope and the aspect of the hill, a field, for example, that might change the way the air flows. And there are little things that I think some farmers will only be aware of through their own experience. So I think there's an element of that in terms of the actual local knowledge of farmers themselves is really useful and shouldn't be dismissed at all. The other top tip I'd give to farmers, but I think this applies to anyone, any member of the public actually, is if you've got the time, use more than one app actually. Start to look at multiple, I mean, obviously use the Met Office one, but look at other ones as well. So look at the Windy one, look at your Apple Weather, look at your Google Weather basically. And a good trick for that is if you see that all the apps are showing the same thing, you can be pretty confident most of the time that it's right. If all the apps are showing different things, then it's hard to know which one is going to be right. But the fact that they're all showing different pieces of information is a clue that there's not as much certainty in the forecast. So if something is really important that you desperately need a dry day, and actually you've got half the apps showing you a wet day and half the apps showing you a dry day, that's potentially something to say, actually, maybe I should sort of hold off on this one because the forecast isn't quite so certain. And then the final tip I'll give for people, which is applies to the Met Office app, probably to some of the other ones as well, trying to summarize the weather using a symbol is really difficult for a particular location. Because as you know, the cliche in the UK is we have four seasons in one day, and you can, in the space of an hour, which is typically the shortest kind of gap you get on your weather app, you can have it be wet, dry, cold, windy, all the rest of it, basically. So it, in particular for sort of rainfall, a really good thing to do is look at the map, and there'll be a radar map that will show you the rainfall that's happened over the last 6 hours. So you can use that to kind of go, okay, where's it raining downwind of me? And is that weather front progressing towards my location? And you can do a bit of a back of the envelope. That's a kind of forecasting trick of working out how long it's going to reach you. And then you can run it forward as well to see what the forecast is looking like. And a great thing about that in terms of looking at rainfall, for example, is it really helps you understand the uncertainty. So in a showery situation, you'll see lots of little blobs everywhere. And the kind of cliche that's mentioned about showers is it's like saying, if you're boiling a pan of water, you know there's going to be lots of bubbles, but you don't know exactly where the bubbles are going to be at any one time, basically. And it's the same when you have big thunderstorms and showers, basically. You can have one location that gets a torrential downpour and another location that stays dry. But you can see that when you look at the map, how dense those showers are and whether there are any kind of supercells or blobs that actually look more, whereas the symbol on the app will just be the sort of shower symbol, basically.
I have to say, Tom, I think you're teasing me now because you're talking about rain and I don't think I've had rain for weeks. So,
there's some in the forecast this evening for us here in the southwest. But so if it comes, that'd be nice. Hopefully it'll clear some of the humidity. But
I'll keep my fingers crossed is what I'll say for that one then. But what I'm taking from all of this and from you, Tom, and from you, Alice, is that while things are potentially feeling like ever-changing, ever-variable, there is still hope. You know, farming is still very much viable within the UK. It just might need some adaptations.
Well, Charlotte, I don't know about you, but I feel reassured today because talking to our friend at the Met Office, it turns out I am right to have more than one weather app on my phone.
I'm glad that that's the main takeaway you took from that, Phil.
I'm going to look out the window more as well and look at the clouds and see if I can work out what's going on, because a bit of local knowledge apparently is power.
Well, my husband does always think that it's a little bit of witchcraft that I can tell him when the rain's coming because I can feel it. So, or like, oh, there's something in the air and you can feel when the weather's changing. And he does think that, yeah, sorcery. So you need to channel a bit of inner witchy Charlotte. Put down the app, maybe, if it's saying variable and look out the window.
We certainly did learn a lot from that. And if anyone is interested in finding out more about AHDB's Climate Resilience Action Planners, which if you do engage with that, I do genuinely think it can benefit you on farm and really, really helps you think about some of the things that you can do to mitigate the effects of climate change. Then you can either go to the AHDB website where you can find the action planners very easily, or we'll put the details as well in the show notes for the podcast this week.
Yeah, another example of when yet more data is actually useful. So more data, more power.
For anyone who is watching or listening this week, please get in touch. If you've got anything you'd like to share with us, email agshow@ahdb.org.uk.
And this podcast goes out on the first day of Groundswell. So on next week's show, Charlotte, you and I, we're both attending, aren't we? We'll report back.
I'll make you buy me an ice cream because I think the weather's still going to be a scorcher.
Hey, speaking of ice creams, do you remember our former CEO? He used to buy ice creams, didn't he? For podcast
very
presenters.
True, yeah.
Helen, if you're listening.
What a mark.
That's all I'm saying.